We'll call the meeting to order. Representative Fabian?
Yes.
Would you approve the minutes of March 22nd?
So moved.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes of March 22nd? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed or approved? Representative Fabian, would you like to approve the minutes of March 23rd?
I will, yes, sir.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. Neither one is. No one's here. The chair's going to call a recess for like 3 minutes until we get one of the authors of one of the bills that we're hearing here. If no one's opposed to that, I hope. Or we could recess for 12 hours and come back after the Ranger Party, if rules would allow that. Representative Moline moves that we...
Are these two Republican
bills?
Could
you put that in karaoke form? Or?
Mr. Chair, I thought there was a house rule somewhere that if the authors don't show up, we're adjourned. We're out of here.
I haven't seen that, but we could.
I say, are these two Republican bills, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, they are.
Here she comes.
Oh, I was going to say, in a bipartisan way, one time this happened when I chaired one of the education committees, and in a bipartisan way, we really gave the authors a hard time.
We did. Well, we could do that.
About promptness and attendance and all kinds of things.
Okay. All right. So after our long recess, waiting for someone that had a bill present to us, we will reconvene the meeting to order. Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, first off, I want to apologize to the committee members for being tardy today. It is something I was not raised to do. We always showed up at least 10 minutes or more before any event. So my apologies to you. I'll make it up to you in some way later on.
Okay, Ms. Anderson, I will move House File 194 in front of us, and we are going to lay this over, members. So,
Mr. Chairman, could I ask the author if she heard our discussion as she was coming in? Or
You could ask.
Did you hear our discussion, being that you opened up with the apology?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, we had a little fun with a fellow who came to our committee, redistricting committee, late. We decided that we're going to have a little fun with him and told him that we had already left and adjourned for the day, and I appreciate that you didn't adjourn for the day. That's the extent that I heard. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, or Mr. Chairman, we were just preparing to do something like
Hi.
That.
Oh, Representative Moline did move, or maybe it was Rukavina and he wasn't in the room, move that we have a recess till after the Ranger Party. they explained that you might have a better chance of passing your bill at that point.
Yes, well, I'll do that too. That's
okay,
fine.
Go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, in all seriousness, many of you have seen this bill before. It is a piece of legislation that is near and dear to my heart, and basically the gist of it is that we're asking that we have a better picture as far as the jobs that are generated by the actions that we do at the legislature, in particular the jobs that are generated through the capital investment process. We are asking that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing and works collaboratively as far as knowing what the outcome is of the actions that we take at the legislature. That's basically it. I won't belabor it since I am tardy today, and I'll be stand for any questions.
Well, Representative Anderson, I would have one question. Do you know what kind of cost or strain this would put on whoever were to do this?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. I had a fiscal note prepared. As far as the cost to the state, it's in fiscal year 11, it's about $11,000 that we're looking at, and in fiscal year 13, $3,000, then an ongoing cost of $3,000. Now, when we've had conversations about this issue in the past with Representative Hausman in the committee when she was chair, that was something that we had discussed as the agencies would absorb the cost within their general operation.
Any questions? Representative Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this is going to be going forward, Representative Anderson, does this take into account, so obviously taxation has to occur in order to repay bonds, does this take into account job loss in private industry as far as the ability to pay taxes, retain, that sort of thing, or is this strictly from the governmental side?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Swazinski, this is clearly just from the government tracking side of things, not from the private sector. It's asking that when we do a bonding project, what kind of jobs are generated. You know, throughout the whole bonding process, we hear loud proclamations of this is going to create X amount of jobs, and we never really truly know whether that is the case in the end. And so to provide us with the tools that we need to make sound decisions, we need to have this kind of information at our fingertips so that we have a more transparent process, number one, and then two, we have more tools at the table when we're making these kinds of decisions, and that's the whole gist of this legislation.
Follow up?
I'm good, thanks.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you get any requests for testimony on either of the bills today?
No.
I'm always curious because, of course, the bills we have before us really place responsibility on the entities who are on the receiving end of geobonding, and it would always be helpful to hear if there are unintended consequences, which sometimes happens in cases like this, but apparently nobody has a concern about this one.
Well, Representative Hausman, they might have a concern. They might just not. Maybe they're preparing for the Ranger Party. I don't know.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, looking at this issue, other states have examined this and have done this, and I just think it gives us another tool in the tool chest to be effective in our jobs as legislators in making policy decisions.
Representative Carls.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, when I read this, it's not clear to me, at least, when we talk about the jobs that would be created on a project, you've got the project, the planners and the people who would actually do the construction, but then you also have the suppliers, and I'm not sure how far your bill extends. For example, you put up a new building and it's going to have windows, and then there's a supplier that provides, just one example, the windows, and hopefully they would be manufactured by Anderson or Marvin here in Minnesota, but we don't know that, I suppose, because it goes to an open bidding process. But the point is, how far would you expect those reports to extend?
Sure.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, when we had the conversation about this issue in years past, I'm open to having it be both direct and indirect jobs that are created. But I think at least from the initial startup side of it, I'd like to at least get the numbers that we can get on this issue from direct jobs created. So that wouldn't necessarily include the vendors or the spin-offs from this, but it will at least get a handle on the direct jobs that are associated with the project.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, that's the way the language sounds, but one could have interpreted it in a broader way as well. If the bill moves forward, it may want to be clarified then that we're talking direct jobs versus direct and indirect.
Yep. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, kind of the same question along the lines of the retained jobs.
Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, in the language, it does include whether new or retained.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed it, Representative Anderson, in your presentation, but the structure of the job, whether it's temporary or permanent, how long they're employed, have you considered any of that in your work around the bill?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski. Again, I'm open to any suggestions that you might have as far as that goes. I think at least from the initial part of it, to get it up and going, this would be on the direct jobs. This would be not getting into the maybe some of the weeds that you're talking about, but I'm certainly open to that kind of language down the road. You bet.
Follow-up? Any other question? Representative Hausman.
Just an observation, Mr. Chair. I've always thought this puts some of the smallest projects perhaps more at risk. I know the University of Minnesota already collects this kind of information. I know Minsku does. But I try to imagine, I know one part of the bonding bill that's always very popular, particularly in greater Minnesota, is local bridges or wastewater infrastructure or a stoplight in Thief River Falls. And I think the smaller the project, I think that issue of quantifying the job, if we're going to use that as a measure, perhaps becomes more of an issue.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, some of you probably don't know this. Prior to becoming a legislator, I was the committee administrator for the Capital Investment Committee. And what was interesting about that process, when we went out to the smaller projects, those that are in particular were out in greater Minnesota, what we found is they seemed to be even more prepared to answer those kind of questions as far as how many jobs that they felt would be created and have the data to back it up. So I don't know if that necessarily is the case, but you know, certainly something to ask as you guys go out and do your tours this summer and fall and so forth.
And sometimes these smaller, if you're talking monetary, they're more labor intense, so you could in essence create more man or woman hours on the job than material cost. See no further questions, the chair will lay over House File 194.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mannion. The chair will move House File 369 before us, and we will be laying this over too. So please explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, everyone. This is a bill that came out of a discussion I had even before I came to the legislature with a member who's still on this committee, Representative Downey. And what it is an attempt to place data on capital projects in a consistent format for their evaluation. It evaluates them in terms of both the capital used and what alternatives that capital could have been placed in terms of the return that we receive from a public investment. And interestingly, it includes the language, it includes some of what Representative Anderson just presented to you in terms of representing jobs jobs created. It differs from Representative Anderson's bill in that it does not explicitly state anything regarding jobs retained, but the bill calls for a series of pieces of information to be developed and provided on what would be a standardized form for committee members to evaluate the return on investment. Now, return on investment has been in public spending has been an issue that's been before federal, state, and local governments for at least 50 years, if not more, and has been discussed by people doing public policy, economics, business, political science for just about that long. What this does is take some of that literature and bring it into a spreadsheet, and in your packages you will see an example in a spreadsheet form. I apologize, trying to get as much information as I have on here. The numbers are relatively small, so those of us with eyes that require enhancement may have to struggle to read this. But this is for an actual project. It's in fact in the interest of full disclosure, for a project that I have a bill introduced for the St. Cloud Civic Center expansion. I actually have people here from the city of St. Cloud not to testify to the bill there, because the bill is only dealing with the spreadsheet itself. But if there are questions to the substance of what's in the bill, what's in the spreadsheet, they may be able to give us some help and advice. But they're here largely to help me with that. As you work through the bill itself, I would encourage you to follow along from lines 1.12 down, and you will see a list of items that are desired. 112 to 115 calls for a comprehensive description of the project. including some specific items. That would be a narrative that would be in front here. I haven't provided that to you today since I think it would be easy for you to imagine what that would be like. And then beginning at 2, total cost of ownership of all costs. So we have construction operation costs, and we have construction operation benefits, or listed here as economic impacts. It continues through revenue projections, net financial surplus or loss of the project, and what you will see is pointers from the top. And I, my thanks to you, Ryan, for getting this set together for us. Mr. Blodgett was very helpful in getting this information provided to us, so that as this is laid out here, you can see some of the benefits and costs that have been provided to you. You should be able to follow along, including the net jobs that have been provided. One of the things that I did in this, and this was different from what was originally received from the folks in the city of St. Cloud, was we netted out in this discussion the capital that would be used in the public project in St. Cloud that, if not in this project, would have been used some other place in Minnesota. It's worthwhile to note that I've spoken to several people who've indicated that, on average, their estimate is about half of the bonds sold by the state of Minnesota for its public investment are purchased by people who are within the state. Those dollars would probably have stayed in the state anyway, and therefore maybe should not be counted as a net impact on the state of Minnesota. They would have been invested elsewhere. But half of the bonds that we do sell are actually purchased by folks who live outside the state, and therefore would be an attraction of dollars into the state, and therefore would have an effect equivalent to a stimulus of investment that you might have learned back in, principles of economics class. What I've done is put that net in. I've netted that out in this particular calculation. Even netting that out, and I admit that would be a part that would be subject to some discussion from you, and perhaps you'll find that a rather provocative point. Happy to discuss it. Even with that netting out, you will still see that the return on this investment is positive, and it nets an additional just short of $1 million of or $322,000 net present value to the state in terms of its project payback. So it has a pretty nice, it does show us that the return is there, and it's a way of making comparisons between different projects. One other question, and then I'll open up to questions, but I often try to anticipate the questions I'm going to have to answer, so let me anticipate one. Would you use this for all different kinds of projects? Okay, this is a local project that has a pretty well-defined place where you're doing the building. The benefits are pretty clearly defined. What about, for example, flooding, which we'll probably have to talk about here in the next few weeks? Well, I think it would be reasonable to say that perhaps we should have something in the language that we eventually adopt if we do decide to go down this road that would allow for exceptions, for example, emergency bonds for flooding, wouldn't have to go through this process. When times of the essence, this does take a little bit of time. Then the other question provoked by Chairman Howe's comment to Representative Anderson before, the data that's in this was generated by a program that many of us used in doing local economic development projects called MPLAN. Many of you are probably familiar with it. Could you do this with smaller projects? Well, I went and asked our city people what additional work do they have to do to fill this out, and their answer was simply, really, we tracked this stuff all along. We had this data available to us from the start. This really wasn't much in the way of additional work. So, and that was one reason why I was able to go to them and say, okay, then can I use your numbers to make an illustration of what this bill would do? So that information apparently is available to a number of folks, but I'd like to take I stand for questions at this time, and am encouraged. I would encourage you to think about, as you think about this, if you have ideas for ways we would amend this while it still lays on the table, I'd be very happy to hear those.
Representative Banning, it depends which hat I put on as to what kind of questions I would ask, but just out of curiosity, what would the return on investment be on a wastewater treatment facility?
Well, a wastewater treatment facility, Chairman, Mr. Chairman, a wastewater treatment facility provides direct benefits in terms of providing you with cleaner water. Measuring the value of cleaner water is done through a modeling strategy known as hedonic pricing, determining how much people are willing to pay for clean water versus dirty water. That's a program that's been around for quite some time. There are a number of people that would be able to give you those types of estimates.
I was afraid you'd say that, but... If you have a building that's put up by a private entity and it's used to or an insurance company or a stock corporation or selling goods, I would imagine that store gets a good return on its investment by the profits it makes. But when the state does a project, it does it for the public good but doesn't necessarily make a financial gain on the building of the structure. Would I be correct in that? So we wouldn't have a return on investment in that fashion like they do in the private sector?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd make two points to that. First of all, this bill doesn't call for you to do anything other than make this estimate. You can still go ahead, even if something shows to be negative, you can still go ahead and fund it. It's certainly, there's no barrier that says you can't do that. Secondly, I think in the process of discussing this bill, the question is whose benefits are going to get counted. Is it going to be just the state in terms of its fiscal impact, or is it going to be measuring the benefits to the people of Minnesota through having cleaner water? And again, I would point out there are ways of making those estimates, and most people, when we teach cost-benefit analysis, that's in fact what we do. We try to figure out the benefits to folks who perhaps are getting the good or service through a non-market mechanism. Clean water isn't always something that you get by paying for it. You just get it by turning on your tap. But we would want to be able to measure that, and we do have ways to do that.
Representative Banning, whenever we do get to a bonding bill on the floor, I think I'm going to have you explain a lot of these returns on investments because they're impressive. Representative Rukavina.
First of all, Mr. Chair, Representative Banning, I thought a lot of the newly elected Republicans were trying to streamline government, not bog it down with what seems to me a lot of unnecessary information. I mean, as an example, you know, Representative Hausman, I think, was the chair then, but maybe it was before her. The Aurora sewage plant blew up, and they needed to get it fixed. And they got $500,000 from the state to fix their sewage plant because it blew up. So who cares about all this information? They needed a new sewage plant. Why would we waste bureaucrats' time filling all of these things out and reporting annually about the benefits and measurable outcomes of fixing a sewage plant? I'm just curious how the state or society benefits by making somebody do all that paperwork.
Representative Banning.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, most sewage plants are able to already describe the benefits they provide currently.
Well, it's so better than a house, I know that much.
If you blow it up, and if it blows up and you need to replace it, that statement of what benefit was already providing becomes your benefit to its replacement.
But Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Banning, why would you make the city of Aurora clerk fill this stuff out or somebody every 10 years because they got $500,000 for an emergency to fix a blown up sewage plant? I don't understand. I'm not processing this. Maybe I'm nuts. I don't know.
Representative Banning.
Don't answer that last question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I believe we need to be responsible with our dollars, with our bonding dollars. We now approach a point where we're within about $1.6 billion of our debt limit, as according to the debt capacity report. So I do think we need to be rather judicious in where we distribute those dollars, and I think it's worth it to the state and to the people of Minnesota to bear the additional cost, which I don't think are very large to completing an analysis like this. But as I said before, Representative Rukavina, language to take care of emergencies would be fine, and this bill doesn't require you to do anything. It asks for the development of this, but if it turned out you did this analysis and you couldn't quite show all the costs and benefits to it, that doesn't bar this committee from providing $500,000 when it's an emergency.
Well, I know that, Chair and Representative Banyan. I just don't understand why we would, any of us would care. I mean, we're all legislators. We know a sewer plant blew up. We want to help the people because we don't want them to use outhouses. It's 40 below up there a lot. Does a lot to your bottom, you know. So, not your bottom line either, I'm not talking about here. And I don't know why we would have to put them through this. I just don't understand it. But
Representative Rukavina, in Aurora, if it blew up in June or July and we weren't here, they'd still have to wait till January unless the governor called us in or unless Deed found money to grant them. I guess I don't see a problem with it. And if it was something like that, I think it's self-explanatory that they need it. I think they'd get it in a hurry. Representative Carlson.
Just have a couple of questions under your first point and 1.112 when you asked us to look carefully at that part of the bill and that point forward. You said a comprehensive description of the statewide value of a project, and then you referenced in your presentation the St. Cloud Civic Center. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you support that or not, but that's not the issue. But if I recall, when we were in St. Cloud for a site visit, they talked about the regional value. Because I did ask the question, I said, well, we've got civic centers in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and there was a request for one from Mankato, St. Cloud. Would it not be, if you were supporting the St. Cloud project, more to your advantage to talk about the regional value? Because when we're dealing with bonding bills, that's the way we often frame them, you know, the statewide and or regional mm-hmm. value. And so when you look at the Civic Center, you might get one snapshot looking at it from a statewide perspective, but quite a different snapshot in terms of the value and the payback and so on if you look at it as a regional facility, but yet your language says to look at it only as a statewide facility. So something to think about there. The other thing is, I'm trying to recall, we pay off the bonds rather rapidly the first 4 years. Maybe staff can refresh my memory. I think we pay off, 40% of the bonds in the first 5 years or something like that. Could I get an answer to how what is our payback formula? That's what I'm asking when we're paying off those 20-year bonds.
Ms. Zuers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, one of the debt management guidelines provides some structure for this, and it is 40% of GO debt must be retired within the first 5 years and 70% within the first 10 years.
Okay, that's what I recall that. Then I was looking at the first 5 years, but there again, these are to be reported annually. So with that fast payback, you're shaking your head no, but as I'm reading here, it says these measurable outcomes will be reported annually. So you're going to get one picture of the first 5 years because you're paying off 40% of the debt load, and quite a different picture when you're paying off the other 70% within the first 10, and in the final 10 years when you've got most of the bond debt paid off. The point being, we don't amortize these equally over the life of the bond. And so you'd probably be showing perhaps in some instances a loss for the first 5 years simply because you're front-end loading the payback. And I don't think your language addresses that either. And then I did have another question. These are mainly comments, but you selected 10 years, and my question is, being that the bonds are for 20 years, why didn't you choose 20 years?
Representative Bannion.
Well, Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, I'll take the last question first. I think it's difficult for any agency or municipality to estimate something 20 years out. I think 10-year horizon might be about as far as they can see. I did not project it out further. I also would point out that I think we should probably expect a 10-year horizon to be in some way sufficient to tell us whether the project's worth going forward. As to my shake of the head, it was simply to say no. I did not realize that it was an accelerated amortization on these bonds. So I didn't incorporate that. That's right. So it doesn't affect much other than the spreadsheet I have here, which was meant for suggestion only. The bill calls for the folks over in MMB to create the spreadsheet, the template that would be used. But you got me there. I was not aware of that. So I shook my head like, why didn't I look into that before? Okay, so I was scolding myself, not anybody else. And then lastly, Representative Carlson, you asked on state and or regional. My view of it is that the region is a subset of the state, and I've thought about this in terms of merging those together. But if it's more clear to insert the words statewide and or regional value, I would be happy to look at amending the bill in that way, and I appreciate the comment.
And
Representative Carlson,
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of other points, and I appreciate the feedback, but the last sentence here in the under number six, where you're looking at what other opportunities may have been lost, I assume you're talking about available credit. There are times when credit is plentiful and there are other times when it may be tight. But there is a little different market for these particular kinds of bonds. They're general obligation bonds and therefore tax exempt. So they may not be in competition for the investment dollar in the same way that other types of bonds or lines of credit might be. And something to think about what that really means, because that is a very select market, people that are looking for and investing only in tax-exempt bonds, and that means usually a unit of government that is authorized to issue tax-exempt bonds. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that there's a lot of value in that comparison in terms of credit, because I don't think that the competition that implies really necessarily exists.
Representative Ben.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Carlson, first of all, thank you. I think your comments have helped me quite a bit in sort of trying to help shape what kinds of amendments we might need to make to this as we move it forward. I would say to your last comment that the opportunity cost is present. There's always another use of the dollar you have. It may be not to another tax-free investment, but maybe to a taxable investment of some kind. You're willing to accept taxation if the after-tax return on the taxable investment is greater than the return on the tax-free investment. So you would probably be willing to consider a broad variety of possible opportunities. And the opportunity cost discussed in this case is both a public and private sector opportunity. It's not just that the dollars that don't go into this project will be used in some other public sector project in Minnesota, but they could be in a public sector project in another state, or they could be in a private sector project in Minnesota or a private sector project in another state. So we need to consider all those different possibilities, and I'm going to suggest to you that it's a difficult conversation to have, but it really is the focus of what we need to be thinking about in this bill, is that the return on investment is return relative to the other opportunities available for that piece of capital that's being moved into the public sector. And how we refer to that is frankly, this conversation is the most important conversation in some way you could have on this bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I, being one that I quite frankly do a fair amount of investing. And you do look at various instruments, but the way I invest today is a whole lot different than the way I invested when I was quite a bit younger. One's income enters in, and I understand what you're saying at a certain level, but when you get down to the practical impact and you're looking at those choices, there, my point is that there's quite a different market at times for the tax-exempt bonds than there is for other bonds that might pay a greater return but are taxable. And I'm not sure that they're in as direct competition as you might imply, but that maybe is a disagreement between a couple of people that might deal with a fair amount of investing. I don't know what you do, but I do follow those things fairly closely from a personal standpoint.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson, thank you. My guess is we'll have lunch over that someday, and I'd be happy to have that conversation continue there.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ed, this is really intriguing, and I'm just glad that you brought it forth, especially as I hear you talking about a failed sewage treatment plant and how there is ways to calculate the price and the return on investment for clean water. But what I'm seeing here is that you're making a good case for the St. Cloud Civic Center project, and are you making then a case for a bonding bill this year, a large bonding bill, because we're under our debt limit? And I'm sure that you could show us septic systems and sewage treatment plants and this and add them all up, and we'd be foolish not to do a huge bonding bill.
Well, Representative Scalzi, if you rewind the tape, he did say we could go as high as $1.6 billion left in the state. Representative Banyan.
Yes, I should have probably made bigger letters at the bottom there. It says draft for discussion purposes only at the bottom at the bottom of the sheet, and I should have written for illustration purposes only. But I also did, Representative Scalzi, identify that while I'm not discussing whether or not a bonding bill moves in this particular session or not, I actually do have a request for the money for this project as a separate bill, and some members of this committee have signed on to it.
Representative Halsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because the bill is all-inclusive, I think maybe that's why we're struggling with some of the examples. I mean, it says shall develop, MMB shall develop a return on investment analysis of all requests. So I just pulled out what is the Minsky Heaper list.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to look at details of this. On the first page, I see an SMSU elevator modification for about $1.4 million, SCSU elevator modification for a little over $1.1 million. I mean, you can see in fairly small print.
Yep.
And so I don't know if we're going to hear from Minsky today, but, I mean, since we're all inclusive, it sounds as though we would be asking, for example, our higher ed institutions to quantify return on investment on all HEPR projects, because that's one line of the bill, but it funds a lot. But I wonder if I could approach it from the other perspective. If we measure return on investment for doing something, doesn't the state have to ask the other question, particularly as we're concerned about the economic health of the state? What is the impact of not doing something? And I would just use Representative Rukavina's example. In that case, I suspect the public health becomes a public good. There would be a cost for not dealing with that emergency. I think about local bridges. Having sat next to Representative Leader for a lot of years, he's talked about a lot of those local bridges. They are very important to one or two farmers if they're isolated. And who does the return on investment in that case? Does the farmer or who produces the numbers? How do we gather that information? And some of you may recall when we dealt with Representative Downey's portion of the state government bill on the floor, I reminded people of what he'd said in this committee, that he believed maybe all of capital investment we should measure return on investment, and if there's return on investment, they should repay the bonds. And when I see on line 123 an optional schedule for payback of the bonding cost to the state, I suspect every single person sitting in this room probably has experience with a number of bonding projects that it was precisely because we were making an argument for the public good, that we really believed it was infrastructure that contributed to our being economically competitive, that having an optional schedule for payback of the bonding cost kind of takes a step backward to the state being partner.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bannon.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hausman. There's a lot to unpack in your question. Let me see if I can try. First of all, the easiest one is who produces the numbers, and I would argue it has to be the authority that's come forward to seek the money. So, for example, the HEPR piece that you talked about, of course, Minsky would do. But if you were doing for example, a bridge, I would expect that the that if it's a town,
I should tell you behind you, the Minsky lobbyist just left. So
he must be comfortable then. thank you, Representative. I would think that if it's a bridge, there are lots of things you have to quantify in that. There's travel time. I remember I did a training for cost benefit analysis for young professionals in Mongolia several years ago, about a 2-week training program from USAID, and in the process of doing that, we gave them a road project to do cost benefit for, and they had to estimate things like travel time, less wear and tear on cars because the road was newer, and so on. And it was basically three people working for about 3 days that produced a product that I thought was pretty representative of what you might see in a project like what we have here. So I would argue that in fact, Representative, we could probably expect them to do that. Now, HEPR, it's an interesting case. I actually thought about it talking to our friend from Minsky here just a little while ago today, and I expect that they have numbers that would be able to represent that. I think if you're going to replace the elevator, you somehow have to measure. Sometimes you have to measure what it is. Sometimes, though, I mean, and this may get to a point that Representative Riccovina was making before, sometimes you got to replace the elevator because code changed and you just simply have to bring it up to code. You know, being in violation of the code, you can put a dollar figure on it, but eventually at the end of the day, doggone it, you just got to change the elevator. This does not require you to clear some hurdle in order to get your bonding dollars. It's simply a way to format the data, and hopefully, I hope, help this committee make more informed decisions. If you think the information is not useful to you, you should not adopt this bill.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Bannon. I certainly support the concept of return on investment analysis here. My concern is along the lines of some of the questions that have been raised about whether there you can universally have one-size-fitting-all different projects. And I guess I'm wondering, do you feel that the commissioner would have the flexibility to bring forward some variance in terms of the analysis that needs to be done on different types of projects? Obviously, if you have a small project, like you mentioned, the elevator, that doesn't meet code, other HEPR kinds of projects or various other kinds of projects that might request bonding, aren't the same thing as doing an analysis on a civic center, let's say, or some other such thing. Do you envision that the commissioner would have the flexibility to say that there might be some different procedures that would be followed given the nature of the project that's being funded?
Representative Banning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lanning, on lines 1-6 through 1-8, the commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget and the State of Commerce, with approval of the governor, in conjunction with the committees of the legislature responsible for capital investment. Okay, if you stop with that, it would indicate that it's a collaborative process between several individuals. Certainly the state economist would be part of that, and I think and the chair of this committee and the chair of its corresponding committee in the Senate. I think that more than one format would be acceptable under this. If we need to specify that, happy to do so. But I do think there's going to be, we clearly need some language, I think, to deal with the emergency situations, be it flooding or an exploding sewage plant. And we probably need something to deal with the possibility that smaller communities may have a different ability to meet all the requirements in here. However, I'd recall Representative Anderson testified to us about 45 minutes ago, which was that she found that smaller communities had this kind of data, that they had worked hard to provide this kind of data in terms of, at least in terms of the jobs. And frankly, once you have the jobs number, you can do a lot of the rest of this without a whole lot of effort. It's not a very difficult calculation to make. And I would presume for the money that is representing the fiscal note to be developed in terms of a template for $40,000, you ought to be able to get a pretty nice product on the other side.
Representative Lang?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that the end product here, what we come up with, we do not have a one-size-fits-all, because I clearly see that there are differences among the various projects that might be funded, and so I would hope that as we develop this with the process that's set forward in this bill, that would be the result.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Banyan, you and Representative Carlson were talking about the availability of capital and measuring the opportunity cost of jobs based on the capital being used either in a government-sponsored project of some sort or some other sort of use of that capital immediately. Would another way to measure the opportunity cost related to jobs be to maybe focus on the jobs that would be displaced from the economy during the repayment period of those bonds, coupled with the ownership costs of the facility or project? Could that be done in addition to or in place of that discussion you and Representative Carlson had earlier?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Drazkowski, I think that's, in fact, the conversation. That's all part of that same conversation, I think. When you borrow a dollar to put into one of these projects, that's a dollar that's not going to be used someplace else. That dollar that's not used there is not capital that creates a job in another public sector capacity, another public sector project, and it's not available to create any jobs in the private sector. There is, I can tell you, in the public policy literature, a whole discussion about the comparative cost of a dollar of capital in the private and public sector. It goes under the term the social opportunity cost of capital. The dollar, the replacement rate isn't one for one necessarily. It could be that the public sector has to generate a number greater than one, greater than the number in the private sector because of some displacement. But it can go the other way too. There's literature that suggests that when you invest in a piece of public capital, it crowds in private capital for investment as well. When you have a new road in place, all of a sudden the soda shop at the end of the road or along the road gets more business, and you work to expand the soda shop. And so it can go in either direction. You're right, but it's not exactly clear what that rate is, and so I would probably stick to a one-to-one, $1 for $1 replacement, just as a simple way of avoiding getting into the deep weeds of trying to figure out what that social opportunity cost is.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Banyan.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just thinking along the lines of social opportunity costs or the return on investment, because I have a bill in for a bridge, and it's in an area that's got terrible congestion. And I've seen some congestion numbers before, the cost to society when your car is sitting in traffic just idling for hours and hours, and we're not able to move traffic. For instance, in my area, it's the north end of 35E where it comes into 694 going west. You simply can't go there during rush hour. So those costs, I would think, would be off the chart, whether they be social costs with the pollution that's descending on the people who live there, or the cost of the time of the people who are sitting in their car for such long periods of time. And I guess my fear would be that that would run way to the top of the bonding bill, and something else might be down lower. So when we're doing the analysis, are we doing it in a way that we would compare projects? So some would be good, some would be bad, and some would drop off, and like my little project would for sure get funded. Is that the reason for doing the analysis?
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Scalzi. Yes, I think that's in fact what you want to do. I think the reason to have a standardized format means that you intend to make comparisons across projects along at least one or more of the measures that's on that spreadsheet. I do believe that if you were able to capture accurately the cost of the pollution that was additionally created by having cars sitting on that ramp waiting to get on to the next freeway, you might be able to show that the return on that investment is fairly high and it would move to the top. Will it move other projects to the bottom? Yes. We have scarce capital. It has to be rationed somehow, and my hope is that you would find the spreadsheet helpful in that rationing process, because at the end of the day, that's our job on this committee.
Representative Halsman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's a good segue to what I was going to observe, and that is, if a capital investment committee is doing its job, hopefully we are asking all of these questions as we do our work, recognizing what Representative Lanning said, that one size doesn't fit all. But more than that, the people coming to us do the work. I was just running down in my mind, the Public Facilities Authority already has an evaluation process by which they establish their priorities, and we can, and the same with local bridges, rating systems. When they come to us, we know they've done a lot of the internal work. MMB has a process where they ask the critical questions. University of Minnesota does a lot of internal work. I'm not as familiar with that as I am with MNSCU, and that is a massive effort of a whole system. Mm-hmm. Where surely they're asking all of these questions about the public good, where should they go as a system with workforce development. And I would even assume, and I know actually because they gave me the arguments, when St. Cloud brings the request for the convention center, they've done all this, and they can tell us, they can give us the economic argument, and then we can repeat that as we sell the bill. And I think the thing we're forgetting, when St. Cloud makes the argument, they do make a return on investment argument, but what they argue is the state benefits. The state has a return on investment. I think somehow this bill suggests the return on investment is only to that project, and therefore they should perhaps pay the state. But I know in the case of St. Cloud and others, they make the argument there's a return on investment to the state.
Yeah. Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hausman, you're right. It is a return to the state. It kind of slid past part of that question when we talked with with Representative Carlson before, is the region the state, or to put it more directly, does the state have an interest in developing different regions of itself, or does it just want to have as big a state as it can have regardless of where the development happens? If it has an interest in having development occur in different regions, then there's a value to having, you know, having separate strategies and saying, you know, I don't need another investment in this place, even though it has a relatively high return, but that area is doing very well. Here's an area over here that's maybe not doing as well, and we want to make an investment there. But I'd like to also to go to something else you said, which is the other rating systems that the other systems such as Minsky or PFA have, and they're fine for the types of projects they do. Minsky, because I know that system probably the best, can certainly rate the quality of its projects toward its mission. But the question is that this bill tries to address is sort of the, what do you do with dissimilar projects? How do I evaluate a building, say at Morehead State versus Representative Scalzi's bridge, and that's the harder decision because you get different information in different formats from two entirely different groups, one Minsky, one MnDOT, and you've got to find a way to balance those out. And I hope that you'd find this type of analysis useful in making those comparisons between unlike projects versus between like projects.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I got to thinking as the discussion was going on. First of all, I guess I'd like to ask the author, what is the goal of this bill? Is it to then ultimately rank the projects so that a project that has the greatest payback and from the standpoint of the state or region, to rank that ahead of a bill or a project that wouldn't have as great a payback? And then I have a follow-up question.
Representative Bannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, I think payback is one of many different criteria you can use. It's certainly one that would appeal to me just in terms of how I deal with the world and my own worldview, but I don't think that would be shared by everybody on this committee. And there certainly are reasons why you might decide it's not a payback issue, it's some different issue that you're trying to do with it. But at least in my own mind, I would think one way I would rank projects would be by either payback time, or you could rank it by a return on investment measure, some internal rate of return on the investment. There are in fact, you know, even within the subset of financial criteria you'd use, there are a variety of criteria. Payback time would be only one of them.
Yeah, but Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, the bill here seems to focus really only on what the payback would be. And let's use St. Cloud as an example. You've got, and we'll use Minsky. You've got a very large institution. I think it's still the largest state university unless Mankato's somewhere in the same ballpark in the Minsky system. You also have in St. Cloud a tech college, much smaller institution. And yet you've got criteria here that talks about what the payback would be. And I would argue that in all likelihood, St. Cloud, because of its size, is going to be more efficient in many respects and therefore a greater payback than perhaps the tech college. Another criteria you have here is outside funding sources. And I would assume that St. Cloud State University has a whole lot more fundraising capability than does St. Cloud Technical College. I'm somewhat familiar with that, having chaired that division of the legislature for many years. You know, the fundraising capability of a state university versus our two-year institutions, and yet that would be one of the potential criteria that would be used. Some of the folks with deep pockets for some reason are quicker to give to a state university or the University of Minnesota if we were talking about the other system, and especially the Twin Cities campus than some of the other campuses within that system as well. So I would have a concern about some equity there and how that would play out if we were going to rank these projects, and I think I would perk up on that particular section, especially if I were representing a rural area with smaller colleges, usually two-year colleges, although we have a couple of state universities that relative to a St. Cloud or a Mankato are fairly small, you know, Southwest State University, for example, and and Moorhead would probably be kind of in the mid-range there. But there are those very real practical issues, especially when you included outside funding sources, because usually in the area of higher education that means donors and the ability of a foundation and or the administration to solicit those gifts. I don't know if you want to comment on that, but that's a concern that I would have in terms of the equity just in higher education across the system and the capability to raise funds.
Representative Bannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure I had a question in that.
It was a comment, but if you wanted to...
I actually don't have a comment. I'd ask you to move ahead.
Representative Bannon, before we adjourn, I have to ask you this. Would there be a return on investment on a baseball or football ballpark? And if so, what do you think that would be? You don't have to answer that.
I think in the interest of speed, we should probably adjourn soon, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Drazkowski, if it's not on that remark that the chair foolishly made.
It's not. A shame on you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Bannon, just another thought. I mean, there's been discussion about environmental benefits of certain projects or social benefits, and there may be some we haven't thought or discussed. As we think about these projects, too, I think we need to realize, and I'd be interested in any thoughts you may have, or maybe that's part of your discussion with Representative Carlson over lunch, but what are some of the costs of us doing some of these things, some of the negative environmental things we do? If we build a bike trail, for instance, people like to feel fluffy about that, sometimes regardless to how much the bike trail is used. But we also destroy farmland and other things, ostensibly environmental degradation to projects like that. If we buy a wildlife management area, we take that particular land out of production for agriculture. We take that particular land off of the local tax rolls, provides for property tax increased liability for local folks. I think about some of those costs that come with the projects too, and I don't know if you've thought about that, and maybe there's a lot more thought to go into that, but I'd be curious about your comments.
Representative Bannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Drazkowski, it's a great question. There is environmental degradation that can happen around some projects. The bill is really focused on opportunity costs. It's not just the opportunity cost of the capital we directly invest, but it's also the opportunity cost of the land we consume. It's the opportunity cost of the labor that we're using and where else it might be used as well. And so that alternative use of the land, or that diminished use of the land as a result of putting it into the public project, should be included as a cost in any of these types of calculations that we have here. I would agree with you.
Representative Drazkowski, I can't resist, because sometimes we differ a little bit on ideas, but your question to Representative Bannon was sort of like, in my mind, if we didn't have trails, didn't have wildlife areas, different things like that, we'd be living the Truman Story. That was that movie where everyone lived in a bubble and they watched him grow up, and they didn't have trails, they didn't have fishing, they didn't fly anywhere. I mean, there were airlines, but never a plane, never went across the sky. But anyway, that's just a comment from the chair. Any other questions? Seeing none, the committee's adjourned.